Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
On May 2nd, 2024, it's a memorial of St. Athanasius, Bishop and Doctor of the Church. It's also the National Day of Prayer today across the country, with the theme being Lift Up the Word and Light Up the World. And it is from 2 Samuel 22, chapter 22, verses 29 through 31. For you are my lamp, O Lord, and my God lightens my darkness. For by you I can run against a troop, and by my God I can leap over a wall. This God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord proves true. He is a shield for all those who take refuge in him. So a beautiful prayer for this National Day of Prayer. And of course, in the Catholic Church, we're celebrating someone who taught us an awful lot about prayer and Jesus, of course, St. Athanasius, Bishop and Doctor of the Church. Coming up, because it is a Thursday, that means we will be joined by the wonderful Father Mitch Pacwa for our cultural connections. So several stories that I want to speak with Father Mitch about, including an interesting survey. In a poll last year among Gen Z, they found that only 18% of those between the ages of 18 to 34 said they were extremely proud to be American. So patriotism is way down. We're seeing a lot of problems that are coming out of these various protests and what these young people are saying, many of them who are involved in these. And there seems to be, this is just my take on in watching this, in addition to all the chaos, there seems to be a great lack of self-awareness, a great amount of entitlement, arrogance, and ignorance on top of everything. And how have we gotten to this point? Well, again, in my personal opinion, I think we've pushed God out of everything. And when you have these elitist attitudes and when you think it's all about you, I mean, you can see and hear the entitlement in these students who are demanding to be fed and sending out lists of what type of food they want. Gluten-free, no nuts or bananas, a certain type of water. It's unbelievable. In addition to the woman, the PhD student, who was saying that they needed humanitarian aid, those who, you know, barricaded themselves inside Hamilton Hall before it was cleared out. So again, the spiritual aspect of this is really important in terms of the tone of what is being expressed here. It's very dangerous, it's anti-Semitic, and other things. So Father Mitch has his pulse on the culture, which is why we call this Cultural Connections. We'll catch up with him. He's on the road again, but we will be joining him in about 15 minutes or so. Then we're going to take a look at a very powerful story that was shared in the National Catholic Register recently. Her name is Nicole LeBlanc, and she's a southeastern Michigan lady from our area. And Andrew was familiar with her, and he's the one who came up with the idea. He always has great ideas for the show, so thank you, Andrew. But he remembers her from seeing her at his parish, Divine Child in Dearborn, Michigan, which is a wonderful parish in the Archdiocese of Detroit. He's not sure if she goes there any longer, but she has quite the story. And we will put the link to the beautiful National Catholic Register article on the archive section for Catholic Connection. The story is all about hope in suffering, and it was a story that was also sharing the details of the passing of someone else from southeastern Michigan that I've had the chance to meet and interview, Jessica Hanna, and her story was revealed recently. Her cancer came back, and unfortunately, Jessica lost her battle with cancer. But if you remember her story, she was diagnosed with cancer while she was expecting, but she refused to get an abortion, and her baby was born perfectly healthy. She was in remission for a while, but unfortunately, the cancer came back, and she died right around Easter time this year. Incredible, incredible pro-life witness. But Nicole is going to talk about her situation, and she became pregnant with conjoined twins, and she knew that they would die very quickly after being born, but she refused an abortion. And she gave birth to them, and she was able to have them baptized and even able to get to know her babies before they passed away. So a beautiful story of hope through suffering. Nicole LeBlanc will be joining us to wrap up a Thursday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Hope you can stay tuned for the entire program. Weather-wise, the National Weather Service is telling us we have some severe thunderstorm and heavy rainfall threats to the center part of the nation and record warmth along the East Coast. Active weather for the center of the nation today, severe thunderstorms and flash flooding concerns over portions of the central and southern plains into the Mississippi Valley, and that is into tonight. Meanwhile, cool and snowy in parts of the Northwest and Great Basin with above average and potentially record-breaking temps of the Ohio Valley and the Mid-Atlantic. So that is the forecast. That's our rundown, as we say in the biz. It is 5 minutes past the hour, and as usual, a lot of news to get through. So let's get started on this May 2nd, the Feast of St. Athanasius. Pray for us, and also the National Day of Prayer. In a 16-14 vote, the Arizona Senate voting to repeal a law protecting unborn babies from abortion beginning at conception. Catholic News Agency says the so-called abortion ban repeal bill passed the Arizona Senate despite a narrow Republican majority due to two Republicans joining all Democrats to repeal the pro-life measure. The Arizona House already passed a repeal bill in a similarly close vote last week. The governor, Katie Hobbs, a Democrat, has already said she plans to quickly sign the bill, which will return the state to limiting abortion after 15 weeks. Meanwhile, Tennessee Governor Bill Lee signing a bill this week to increase education on fetal development in public schools. That measure mandates that the state's family life curricula include a 3-minute video entitled Baby Olivia, which was produced by the pro-life group Live Action and shows an unborn baby's development from conception until birth. Several other states, including Iowa, Missouri, Kentucky, and West Virginia, are also considering passing bills to add the Baby Olivia video to their curriculum. Well, Daniel Martindale tells us that Los Angeles police officers in riot gear have since moved into the pro-Palestinian protest encampment at UCLA.
Officers broke through a plywood barricade at about 1:30 this morning local time. Video from the scene shows at least one person being taken away in handcuffs after engaging with officers. Dozens of protesters formed a human chain in an attempt to block officers from moving further into the encampment, which has now been in place for a week. The LAPD has issued several dispersal orders for the hundreds to thousands of people camped outside of UCLA's Royce Hall.
The Los Angeles Police Department has issued a citywide tactical alert in relation to the pro-Palestinian encampment there at UCLA. A tactical alert notifies all LAPD personnel they could be called in to help with the situation, and an unlawful assembly was declared early Wednesday after violence erupted overnight. Pro-Palestinian protesters, meanwhile, inside New York City's Fordham University face a deadline to vacate today. Similar to Columbia University, the protesters went ahead and set up an encampment inside a university building. Students and even some faculty are locked arm in arm, trying to prevent police and riot gear from intervening. They are chanting, "Students, hold your ground, NYPD, back down." Meanwhile, police forcibly removed protesters from a Columbia Hall after they took control of the building earlier. This is just the latest incident of protesters disrupting colleges across the country. And the U.S. House is passing legislation that aims to crack down on anti-Semitism. Democratic Congressman Josh Gothmeyer of New York says this is a bipartisan effort.
We've been working together for months to make sure that it's clear that there's no place for anti-Semitism or hate on college campuses, in our communities. There was nothing complicated, in my opinion, about this vote.
It passed 320-91 as a pro-Palestinian protest continued to rock college campuses around the country. The measure requires the Department of Education to adopt the definition of anti-Semitism used by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance in its enforcement of anti-discrimination laws. Some critics argue the definition is too broad and could lead to censorship. The bill's chances in the Senate at this point are unclear. House Republicans are calling for NPR's CEO Catherine Marr to appear at a hearing next week following a now former staffer's allegation of extreme bias in news coverage. Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers from Washington, who's chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee, joined with two other House Republicans in a letter to Marr. The committee has concerns, it says, about the direction in which NPR may be headed under past and present leadership, the letter said. As a taxpayer-funded public radio organization, NPR should be focusing on fair and objective news reporting that both considers and reflects the views of the larger population in the country and not just a niche audience. The hearing would be before the Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee. Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene forcing a vote over whether to remove Mike Johnson as Speaker of the House. She told reporters yesterday she'll bring the motion to vacate the Speaker to the floor for a vote next week.
Next week, I am going to be calling this motion to vacate. Absolutely calling it. I can't wait to see Democrats go out and support a Republican Speaker and have to go home to their primaries and have to run for Congress again, having supported a Republican Speaker, a Christian conservative.
Green has been critical of Johnson for a series of deals he's cut with Democrats, most recently on federal spending, government surveillance, and aid to Ukraine. She accused Johnson of doing the bidding of Democrats. The move will require the House to hold a vote within 2 legislative days, but the effort seems certain to fail after Democratic leaders this week said they would vote to protect the Speaker. The motion to vacate is the same procedure that led to the ouster of former Speaker Kevin McCarthy last year. Rory O'Neill tells us, once again, inflation is being called the top financial issue facing households across the country.
It's the third year in a row the Gallup survey finds inflation, or the high cost of living, as the most important financial problem facing families today. 41% cited inflation, compared to 35% last year, 32% the year before. Other financial issues popping up in the Gallup survey: too much debt, the rising cost of health care, and low wages.
Over 16,000 pounds of ground beef being recalled due to possible E. coli contamination. Yesterday, the USDA announcing the recalled beef was shipped to Walmart stores nationwide. The affected beef is from the company Cargill Meat Solutions. And the FDA, meanwhile, says cottage cheese and sour cream are still safe to eat after the bird flu was found in dairy cows. The agency is saying Wednesday that it conducted tests on nearly 300 pasteurized retail dairy products after traces of the virus were found last week in commercial milk supplies. It said the tests showed the products did not contain live virus that could make people sick. The FDA said it also tested powdered infant and toddler formulas and found no evidence of bird flu virus. An official with the agency said the findings confirm that pasteurization process inactivates the virus, making it unable to infect people. Paul DeCastro tells us Harvey Weinstein is expected back in a Manhattan courtroom, and that'll happen today.
Prosecutors say they intend to retry Weinstein after his 2020 rape conviction was overturned by the New York Court of Appeals last week. The 72-year-old former movie mogul was hospitalized over the weekend for testing due to medical issues. Weinstein was taken to a hospital to be examined on Saturday, but he was sent back to Rikers Island Jail on Sunday. He remains in custody due to a separate rape conviction from California.
The Federal Reserve is leaving interest rates unchanged. Chair Jerome Powell explained the central bank is still waiting for more information to show inflation is actually coming down.
So far this year, the data have not given us that greater confidence. In particular, and as I noted earlier, readings on inflation have come in above expectations. It is likely that gaining such greater confidence will take longer than previously expected.
The central bank has said its goal is to get inflation down to 2%. Interest rates have remained at their highest in more than 2 decades since July. Since then, the U.S. economy has held up, with some experts believing anticipated rate cuts won't come for several months. Mark Mayfield tells us that the threat of a TikTok ban looming, both Instagram and Twitch are now introducing new short-form video features.
On Tuesday, Instagram announced its discovery algorithm would boost smaller creators' videos through recommendations. On the same day, the streaming platform Twitch also announced the launch of its discovery feed, which will let users endlessly scroll through videos and live streams. The news came a week after President Biden signed a bill that would force TikTok's Chinese parent company to sell the app or face a nationwide ban.
14 minutes past the hour, so glad you're tuning in to EWTN. Up next, speaking of EWTN, our very own Father Mitch Pacwa joins us for Cultural Connections on this National Day of Prayer. A lot to discuss and a lot for which to pray. We'll be right back.
Resetting your password, unsubscribing from emails, printing anything. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your business doesn't have to be one of them, so you can get back to more important things, like learning how that printer works. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
The Encounter Conference, June 26th through the 28th at the New Glass City Center in Toledo, Ohio. 15 powerful speakers.
It is the encounter with the Holy Spirit that makes Jesus come alive and gives us the courage and the wisdom to go forth and to even risk our own lives.
Everyone pretty much says the miracles that Jesus did are real. The miracles that the early church did are real.
As often as the popes are talking about the new evangelization, they're also saying we need to pray for a new Pentecost. We need to return to the upper room. Encounter represents the church returning to the upper room. As we're coming boldly before God and asking Him to renew that Pentecostal fire for the strength, the gifts, and the wisdom to be able to preach Jesus to a lost and broken world, so that we can become fully alive in Him, so that the world may come to believe that Jesus is the one whom God sent.
Register today at EncounterConference.org. That's EncounterConference.org.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Every Thursday, good Lord willing, we speak with the one, the only, Father Mitch Pacwa from EWTN. He is a scripture scholar. He is an amazing host. He's an author, a speaker, retreat leader, and he's full of a lot of common sense. And Father, I'm praying for a return to common sense today for this on the National Day of Prayer. And among other things, leadership and less arrogance among these people who are protesting and this elitism. And it's just so out of control. So I was wondering, watching all of this, you and I have been talking about this now for about 2 weeks, and it just keeps, now even though the police have moved in, they moved into Columbia earlier this week, they're moving in now at UCLA, apparently they're, and watching some of the breaking news stories this morning, they're receiving a lot of resistance, apparently, so there's some trouble out there, so we have to pray for that situation as well. Mm-hmm. But we're into this now 2 weeks, at least 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And just your thoughts here on this National Day of Prayer in terms of the lack of morality that's coming out.
I think there are a number of things. First, the pay attention to this being a protest by two different kinds of people. There are students who get their news apparently from TikTok. They don't know and they don't believe what happened to the Israelis, the 1,500 Israelis or so, back on October 7th. They don't believe it. They say that's all propaganda. And they filter out any kind of empathy for Israelis, any kind of justification for the war in Gaza. That would be the students. Then there is a second population that's present here. Look for the ones with the masks. Also, notice all the helmets are the same over in Los Angeles. They all of a sudden have gas masks. I don't think they sell workers' helmets and gas masks at the bookstore on campus.
Mm-hmm.
This was all brought in by these professionals. They are looking more like stormtroopers. Matter of fact, I've been thinking about calling them the SS. If the earlier evidence is true that these are being financed by a George Soros organization for an open society, then these would be the Soros stormtroopers, and that would make them the SS. And these stormtroopers are professionals. Now, what I saw before I left home this morning, mm-hmm, was that they were being taken one at a time, and there was not a lot of, they weren't fighting back. And I think that something that was mentioned by Raymond Arroyo may be exactly correct. I kind of suspected this. This is a staging. This is a way to see how will the troops, how will the police, the state police, etc., act in various locations. When bridges are blocked and ports are blocked, airports are blocked, and now universities are blocked, they're testing in different locations how the police will react. And then they may use this for a more serious target, such as the threats that are being made about the Democratic National Convention, or perhaps the election itself in November, or and what happens in in Chicago at the Democratic Convention may also be a second stage of preparation by these professionals, not by the students so much, but by the professionals who had once been part of Antifa and now are part of this pro-Gaza, pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, it varies in different places, movement. So this is something to pay attention to. And hopefully there will be investigations about the funding, because some of the people, for instance, the two or three janitors at Columbia that were held hostage for a while, that's a criminal offense. And I don't know if the district attorney will file suit against anybody for holding hostage. They may simply have to go to a civil lawsuit where they won't be in jail, but they'll be fined. And they can be fined a lot of money for this, because this is a serious crime to hold.
But do you think that will actually happen? We're talking about the state of New York. You're talking about New York City. You're talking about a very liberal state with prosecutors that go after things that really don't seem to matter, as opposed to you're talking about malicious destruction of property. You're talking about holding someone hostage against their will. These are serious criminal acts, Father.
I don't trust the district attorney or the prosecutors to go after the criminal charges. But individuals can go after, that's why I mentioned civil lawsuits. So that's for property damage. And that's where you can get a lot of money. If it, in a criminal lawsuit, you can have them put in jail. In a civil lawsuit, you can have somebody pay charges or damages done.
If there aren't consequences, then there this is going to continue.
Well, see, that's it. And one of the things that we've seen in the different states is that some of the state leaders and university state university leaders in some of the states like Florida and Texas understand this is criminal behavior, and you are you can protest, but you can't lock people. You can't be anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish. To threaten Jewish lives is a crime, and they went in. In other places, you have feckless leaders, and that the universities have so many left-leaning ideologies present, they become frozen in inaction. They don't know what to do because none of this computes in their mentality of keeping order. Order, you have to, even if you have a two-year-old, you have to, you know, enforce order on a two-year-old. These people have a lot more strength than a two-year-old and even bigger mouths, it seems. And so, you know, you have to take steps. People on the left have no ideological support for in their own minds. I'm not talking about outside. Within their own minds, they have no ability to get their head around the need to bring order, because it means saying you're wrong and I'm right. You have to stop and I will continue. They have no principle for that. This is the result. Also, a lot of people have pointed out that when the professors were locked arm in arm to prevent police at Columbia from going into the encampment, the issue was that the professors, many of the programs, had taught the students to be political activists. So this is the breeding ground, and they got what they had hatched. That
exactly.
They might have thought of little chicks and little ducklings, but they got vultures instead. And mm-hmm. so this is that's the problem of sitting on eggs. You don't know what you're going to hatch if you didn't lay them. And that's right. the case with these professors. They're not parents. They don't have the concern that parents do. They have ideological concerns that they've brought to the students, and now the students have come to the university. And you watch the impact on the university. I cannot imagine that somebody would go in there and pay nearly $350,000 for a four-year education at
yeah.
Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Father, hang on. More discussion when we come back. We're going to get cut off by the satellite break, but we'll continue with Father Mitch Pacwa on May 2nd, Cultural Connection. Stay tuned. Cultural Connections, it's Father Mitch Pacwa from EWTN, author, speaker, theologian. So, Father, some very interesting points you brought up in terms of this being basically some test runs around the country, which actually does make a lot of sense because a lot of these people, this is what they actually do for a living. It's frightening to think, God forbid, what could happen in the future if that is indeed the case. But we don't see a lot of leadership, not from the universities, not from Joe Biden. He said very little about this. He's speaking through his spokespersons. We are not seeing really too much leadership from anybody on either side of the political aisle. Right.
Certainly, the only leadership is being shown at some of the state and local level in places like Texas and Florida. Oklahoma, mm-hmm. places like that, where they have clear, definite commitment to the law. They're committed to law enforcement. They like the police, and they try. Again, you have to keep everybody, including police, within the law. It's not a totalitarian state that can never be allowed. But you do have to let the police do their job. They're that thin blue line between chaos and order. And in a lot of these states, they do show leadership, and the result is students are able to go to class and such. Parents who spent $70,000 this year to have their children go to Columbia are not getting their money's worth. They, mm-hmm. especially the Jewish students, who were told correctly not to come to campus for their own safety. Now, it's incorrect. It's immoral that they should be kept away. It's immoral that students who say, well, I'm Jewish and I'm a Zionist, that's their position, whether you like it or not. They have the right to that, but these protesters don't allow them on campus if they say that. They don't allow them in the library. They block their way. And, you know, nobody stands up for their right. You know, the pro-Palestinian group has a right to think and say what they say. They don't have a right to stop other people from what they think and say. And to block them, that's immoral. But you don't have people who are able to really understand the Constitution. Remember how many times the Constitution has been treated like an old document that's out of date and no mm-hmm. longer applicable. So the right to freedom of religion and freedom of speech can be denied, and they don't have a principle upon which the university can enforce free access by their students to things like the library and the classroom that they paid $70,000. Mm-hmm. That's a huge amount of money, even if it is inflated today. Still, it's a huge amount of money. And, you know, buy a couple of vehicles for that, or get yourself a license as a plumber and have a good living, mm-hmm. but it actually works a living. But you know, this is something that they're stuck. But you have to look longer range, because the Organization for an Open Society that Soros proposes is not about just protesting the Palestinian thing. Again, as I said in the past, he is using the Palestinian cause exactly the way they used the death of George Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
And they used Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter ended with $90 million unaccounted for and its foundresses living in mansions in Malibu and elsewhere. This is not about them. They don't care about them. They bought them off. They're done. Now it's about this group as a way to rally their stormtroopers to go out and get, you know, other feckless students in this case. Before, I mean, when the George, 4 years ago during the election, you know, it was George Floyd and churches were flying BLM's flags and all this stuff. These are feckless fools who are going along with this stuff that not thinking. And
yes, but these feckless fools are in the colleges. And the article that I sent you, I don't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted you to respond. I sent you that interesting piece that was written by a writer in the Telegraph over in Great Britain, looking at us like the United States is full of idiots because we can't control these college students, and
that's
saying
right.
that this is what the future holds. If this is what the future holds for the West in America, we're all doomed. And talking about the elitism, the arrogance of the students, this is, to me, in addition to everything you said, which is spot on, but the lack of morality and the lack of entitlement that these students think that they have, that kind of attitude, again, if there's not consequences, just like with we saw, you know, back in 2020, this kind of a thing is going to happen every few years because they feel like they have to, you know, join some sort of a cause and that they can do whatever they want. They have no respect for the law or anything.
Well, here's one of the things to keep in mind. As I mentioned in previous weeks, when you go to the website of the A15 group that organized the first protests, they're Marxists. And Hayek, who was a Austrian economist, brilliant Austrian economist, pointed out that both the Nazis and the communists have a view toward a totalitarian economy. And it is not something about the German people or the Russian people that made them so genocidal. It was the ideology of National Socialism, Nazis, because they were socialists, and the ideology of Marx that made people totalitarian. And that, pay attention, there is a morality, but it's a morality set by Karl Marx himself, a very, very evil man. I urge people to take a look also at Paul Engor's very fine book, Karl Marx and Satan, Karl Marx and the Devil, I think it's called, by Paul Engor. And you see that it's not just a lack of morality. It is a clear Marxist immorality that is being promoted in the name of totalitarian economy, and fools who are trying to find some moral cause jump onto it and become their troops that are the ones that they can get rid of. They can. You can't believe the perils when you look at the history of Marxism and Soviet Union. They recruited the homosexuals to help them, and they got it into them. The first gay pride parade was in May 1980. In Moscow, for the, run by the state. But then by 1926, just, you know, 8 years later, they were destroying the homosexuals because they used them. They were troops. The Nazis did the same thing with the homosexuals in the brown shirts. And then on the night of the Long Knives, they killed them all.
Yeah.
This is something that they will do again, because a Marxist or socialist, a totalitarian economy, makes of totalitarian...
Father, gotta go. Great points, and we'll catch up with you next week. Thank you so much. Welcome back, Catholic Connection, 39 minutes past the hour. Hope you're having a great day on this, the National Day of Prayer. Nicole LeBlanc is with us, and she was featured in a beautiful story on the National Catholic Register recently. We'll put a link to it. Nicole, thanks for joining us. Good morning. I understand you're a Michigander.
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. And you are you still a Divine Child in Dearborn, or are you at another parish now?
We're at another parish, but we still go for confessions pretty regularly.
Well, it's great to have you on, my dear, and what a story, my goodness. Now, it's interesting because your story was aligned with Jessica Hanna's story, and that was another amazing story, and we just lost her just recently, but what a great witness she was and still is to this day as well. So tell us your story, because it really is quite a journey you went through when you were pregnant with conjoined twins. Tell us about it.
Yes, so it was, I just got pregnant in 2020 of October, my first pregnancy. We recently got married, and we had prayed so much to have these babies, and I just knew from the beginning that I had a lot of morning sickness. I wasn't feeling right. Even at 7 weeks appointment, we saw the little heartbeat, but there was only one. And the provider said, well, you know, there's, if you see a couple of heads, you see some arms and some legs, but let's see and let's progress. So as time went on, 10 weeks, I went to a Christian hospital, and they said, well, you're pregnant with conjoined twins, and they share vital organs, a heart, liver, umbilical cord, bowels, and they're inseparable. They cannot be separated, and most of these babies will either miscarry or die shortly after birth. Most of them don't make it to term just because of how many organs they share. So they pushed abortion on me. And my husband and I, we refused very firmly that this is not something that we would do, murder our own children. We see them jumping in synchronization on the screen, and we're just gonna let God take control. And, they did not miscarry. They kept growing and growing. And so the next step was planning a C-section, knowing that, these girls weren't gonna live very long. And they even told me that my life was at risk at one point. And it was very scary, but I knew that I had to trust in God with all my heart, mind, and soul with this. And I received my communion right before the surgery, lots of planning, met with the funeral home while pregnant with my daughters, and I just wanted this to be as holy as an experience for them. They were born on May 16th, 2023. And they were born for 1 hour. They were alive, and they were baptized immediately. There was a priest in there with me, as well as my mom and my husband. And they were baptized and confirmed by Maria Therese and Rachel Claire.
Wow. So how are you doing now? I mean, obviously your faith is very strong, but that was quite an ordeal you and your family went through.
Yeah, it's been, wow, we're coming up on a year now. We just entered May, and I'm getting a little emotional now, but I know that May is also the month of Mary. So I just need to hold tight to her, and I named one of my daughters after Our Lady, so there's no better gift than to give her and our suffering with Jesus and the suffering that I went through. And this is my first pregnancy, so it was very difficult to kind of continue, but I know my husband always reassures me, you know, we have saints in heaven. We have our little beautiful, they're not angels, you know, God made angels and God made people. So we have beautiful saints in heaven. They're always interceding for us. And that's all I have to hold on to. And the doctor said I would have to wait a year after the C-section because I had a classical incision, one that they don't typically do. And I will need to continue having C-sections in the future. So now it's just trusting in God and his time for when we're supposed to have our family.
Has your faith always been this strong? Because this is quite a test, you know?
Well, when I was younger, we were just cradle Catholics, my family and I. But when I was 15, my father, he passed away of stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And that was when I was in eighth grade. I was just questioning a lot of things. And to see a man suffer for Jesus and say, I am doing this for the conversion of sinners. He couldn't eat or drink anything for 40 days. So he had Jesus in the Holy Communion every single day in hospice. And he said, I'm doing this for the conversion of sinners. And seeing just a man who's about to die and still being so firm in his faith, it really shaped my faith life, my sister's faith life, and my husband, who's a convert, who's never met him, his life is completely changed from this story. So we attribute all that to the Holy Eucharist, and there's beauty in suffering.
It's very hard for people to, I'm sure, wrap their minds around your strength and your husband's strength, your family's strength. But there is that you know, we think about that verse, all things work together for good, in Romans 8:28. And, you know, you say, well, why would God, you know, allow this? Well, we live in a fallen world. Things happen with medicine, things happen in the world. But your witness and your father's witness, for example, that's another example, but your witness as well of bringing these beautiful babies into the world and allowing them the gift of baptism and confirmation and then getting to know them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, it was so beautiful to finally see their faces. We had seen them growing from 7 weeks all the way to 32 weeks. I had ultrasounds every couple of weeks to make sure that there were no signs of heart failure, and ultimately that's what happened. But finally to see their little faces, we were so blessed, and we're just so happy that this is exactly the right thing that we did, not to terminate these babies in the womb, because we know that all life is sacred from the moment of conception until natural death. So it was so beautiful to see that culmination of all my hard work, and just seeing that in my daughter's faces. I really praise God. My strength comes from him directly.
Amen. Talking with Nicole LeBlanc, and her story is shared in a beautiful piece recently in the National Catholic Register, ncregister.com. Jessica Hanna, Nicole LeBlanc, Hope in Suffering. And you can find that on our archive section, also at Catholic Connection. We'll put a link there. Do you see yourself maybe ministering to others that may be going through something similar, Nicole? How do you think God is using this in addition to obviously growing your own faith?
Yes, I have given some talks already with the Right to Life in Michigan. I have another talk coming up, and I share my story, and I see the fruit of sharing my story, that people have changed their minds, and they're telling me that, you know, oh, I was okay with abortion in these cases, you know, having conjoined twins, they're going to live a life of suffering, and I'm telling them, you know, this is not the case at all. They did not suffer at all. I will be the advocate, and I'll continue being the advocate for those who have disabilities in the womb, those who are diagnosed as terminal in the womb, because there is such things as palliative infant care and palliative hospice in the womb. There are so many other alternatives than to just murder your child, and there's so many organizations. So I hope to bring that to light in these talks that I'm giving, and people are definitely changing their hearts and their minds. I've already had so many beautiful testimonies that the alternative is much worse than, you know, what you can actually go through.
How were the doctors? Because they were pushing, you said, abortion on you, correct?
Yeah, they were. It was a struggle. We got the diagnosis, and here's the first time I'm learning, oh my goodness, I'm having twins. And in the next sentence, in the same breath, they're saying, well, you can terminate the pregnancy. And I was at a Christian hospital, so I had multiple providers come in and tell me, these are my options, this is what's going to happen, your life is in danger, and I refused every single step of the way. And it was just heartbreaking, and eventually this became such a high-risk case that I had to get transferred to the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, just because it was so complex. Even my surgeon, she had never delivered conjoined twins before, it was her first time. So I really just put my trust in her, my trust in God. And even when they transferred me, they offered me an abortion once again. And I was already 15, 16 weeks. I could already, you know, feel some flutters going on. And I was just, they only asked me the one time when I was transferred. But still, it was just another, I had worked, you know, this whole time and getting over the sickness. And again, they're going to ask me what I want to do. So it was very disappointing.
How sad. It's always abortion. Living. Abortion is the answer to everything, right? It's just so evil. But thank you for your strength. Now, when you did go through, obviously, with the surgery and the pregnancy and brought the babies to term, what was the reaction of the medical community that was pushing against you at the time? Did you hear from them at all? Or was there any, you know, were there any comments, or what did the medical team say?
Yeah, there was, you know, like on everyone's name tags now, you can identify them as they, them, and so how they want to be preferred. So I was like, oh, this is the kind of place that we're at, okay. But the care that we got was amazing. My medical care The surgery went flawlessly. Everything was fine, but I had Gregorian chants playing in the operating room. They said, you can play whatever music you want. And I was prepared, you know, if I were to pass away, I wanted it to be something peaceful and just something beautiful for the girls. My mom was in the OR with us as well as a photographer, my husband, and father. And the nurses just came up to my mom and said, you know, we've never experienced anything quite like this before. A lot of the healthcare providers have never seen conjoined twins before. And this is the first time. And then to be in a room where there was supposedly a lot of chaos, a lot of maneuvering on how to deliver the babies at once.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just so peaceful. And they all were just really surprised with how beautiful and serene the whole environment was.
Well, yeah, because you were covered in prayer and you were praying, yeah. And your whole family was praying and the Holy Spirit was there. And they sensed that. They probably sensed that, I would think.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. And I really hope that some other lives were touched. And it was beautiful. And I am trying to bring a little more advocacy as well to hospitals to try and, if possible, to move parents of infant loss, miscarriage, you know, kind of in a separate area where you can hear other babies, because it was really devastating holding my own babies. They, you know, are already lifeless, and I can hear other mothers, other babies, you know, just in the next room. So it was a little difficult, but then again, another cross I need to carry, and something that I was, you know, okay with doing.
We have a few minutes left, Nicole. Tell us a connection with Jessica, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes. Yeah, so Church Pop, EWTN, they shared my story. My story had a lot of attention, and I had some interviews, and Church Pop put something out on Instagram, and around the same time, I had learned of a parishioner. I was at a different parish for the traditional Latin Mass in Detroit, and I had learned that there was a parishioner. Her name was Jessica, and she had cancer, and she refused abortion, and they were like, oh, you should get acquainted with her, and her Instagram, and I sent her a little message, and just saying my support, and I'm here for her and praying for her, and I didn't get a message back, but I did follow her, so I see that she shared on her Instagram story my story that Church Pop put out. And I sent her another message again. I said, oh my goodness, Jessica, this is me, by the way. This is my story you're sharing. And she immediately messaged me back saying, oh my gosh, like we've been praying for you and just, you know, letting you know that everything's going to be okay and just trusting God. And ever since then, we were just messaging back and forth about all the uncertainties that lied ahead. And she was just so, so wonderful. And even in the hospital, she sent me messages when I was with the girls, and during my whole C-section, I thought of her. I offered up my whole entire suffering. I messaged her and I told her, you know, your cancer that you're going through, I know it's difficult. You know, I saw my dad go through it, but I'm offering up. There's no better way if you have suffering in this life than to offer it up for someone else, to offer it up for sinners, just as my dad taught me. So that's what I did.
I had the first chapter in my book about my mom is offer it up to God and put it at the foot of the cross. That's what she said.
Exactly.
All the time.
Yes.
Offer it up.
Yes.
Offer it up. And, and the Catholic faith, as you well know, and Jessica knew too, we have a beautiful theology on suffering, and nobody else has it like you do. Nicole, what a witness. And I'm glad you were able to communicate with Jessica. Now she's in heaven too, praying for you along with your babies. What a story. Thank you for your faith. And please keep in touch with us and let us know when you have a speaking event. We'd love to help you promote that, especially in the first hour of Catholic Connection if you're in Michigan. But I have a feeling that after the article in the Register and after this interview, you're going to be a busy lady speaking.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
All right, my dear. Bless you. Maybe I'll see you in Motown sometime. And thank you for sharing your story, Nicole LeBlanc. Her story was in the National Catholic Register recently along with Jessica Hanna. Two ladies from Michigan, incredible testimonies of faith, hope, and learning to offer up their suffering for others. We'll be right back on a Thursday morning. Stay tuned.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
The good news for us, as the Catholics who are trying to understand the world through the lens of Catholic teaching, is that we work for something much more than political victories. There's an ultimate political victory, and that is when the king returns. We shouldn't be irresponsible, but we all know that all those choices are relative to the great moment when the king will return and establish his own administration, you might say. And we should never forget that, because the coming of Christ will relativize all human kingdoms and all human political efforts. But this is why we should never permit our politics to distort our witness to Jesus.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Ave Maria Radio and the Ave Maria Radio app.
Spring into mowing season with a new Cub Cadet lawn tractor from Weingarts. We've been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment since 1945. Cub Cadet XT Enduro Series tractors are engineered to offer the best combination of quality, value, and performance. Cub Cadet lawn and garden tractors offer comfort and year-round versatility. Stop by our stores to help find your next Cub Cadet or visit us online at Weingarts.com. From our family to yours, thank you for letting us serve you.
Weingarts, everything.
Doug Keck joins us tomorrow, our President and Chief Operating Officer, with the Inside Word. We're also going to share with you some really powerful new pro-life messages that we all need to help share, get it out there in social media, blast it everywhere. Michael Kenney will be explaining this to us in terms of how these were all put together and where they're going, what they're doing with these different ads. And I'll be sharing a few of them in Fact Check Friday, because these ads contain the truth and the facts about life, about abortion, about all these things that we've been lied to for so many years. So we'll talk about that in Fact Check Friday. Then Michael Kenney will be joining us to explain, of course, the videos and the ads that they're doing. So that is the show for tomorrow. But speaking of tomorrow, don't forget tomorrow afternoon there's Open Line with Colin Donovan. That is Friday at 3 o'clock Eastern Time on EWTN. Talk to you tomorrow. God willing, a domani. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.